Perhaps no job in America has been more romanticized and mythologized than that of the cowboy. From movies to songs, much of what we know about cowboys in the American West is often just a caricature of real life. A new book by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist John Branch aims to give us a different sort of look into the life of the Wright family. It's called The Last Cowboys, a pioneer family in the New West. They might be the first family of American rodeo, multi-generational saddle bronc champions. The Wrights are also a contemporary family in the American West, struggling with issues like a changing climate, encroaching development, and financial pressures on the family's cattle ranching business in Utah. It's also a book with a strong local angle, which we'll find out about in a minute. John Branch of the New York Times joins us now on Skype. John, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
John, your book is about the Wright family and their incredible success in rodeo. But as I mentioned in the intro, it's about a lot more than that. How much does cattle ranching fit into this book and the pressures that they're facing off of the rodeo circuit?
It's a significant part of the book. It's really what they see as their future. I mean, they all realize that rodeo is not forever. Even though they are passing rodeo down from generation to generation, there aren't a lot of old cowboys out there, rodeo cowboys out there, especially in bronc riding. And so they realize that they need to figure out what the long-term plan is. And for this family, it's going to be cattle ranching, which is really kind of the two-pronged approach to this book, is that they're trying to build a future through two things that I think a lot of people would assume are not things to build a future around. And that would be, you know, a somewhat small cattle operation and rodeo.
That's going to be the seventh generation of Wrights in that business. But with drought, with climate change, with a lot of other pressures with development and tourism, how are their lives changing away from the rodeo arenas of the American West?
Yeah, it's interesting because you're right. They have been running cattle on that land outside of Zion National Park, what is now Zion National Park, for seven generations. And it's certainly changing. You know, there's been a lot of news lately about the federal land use. The Bundy family has their operation not too far away from where the Wrights are. So the Wrights are very much in the thick of a lot of the changes going on in the West. That is the battles over federal lands or whether or not they should be put more in local or state hands. They certainly have some opinions about that. The climate change and the drought that they have been facing the last few years has really changed their herd. It used to be that they could throw a couple steers or bulls in with the herd at a certain time of year, and 9 months and 10 days later, a bunch of, you know, 90% of the cows would be pregnant. And now those cycles are off, and that's because of the drought, really, and the feed that is struggling because of the drought. All these things that are issues that they didn't necessarily face 10 years ago, 20 years ago, certainly not 30 or 40 years ago.
How big of a deal are the Wrights in the world of rodeo fans, of rodeo followers? I think certainly they're getting a lot of attention with this book nationally for the people who maybe don't follow the PRCA standings every day. But give us an idea how significant they are in their field.
Certainly. I often compare them to the Mannings in football. You know, the Mannings had a father and two sons play NFL quarterback. The Wrights are like the Mannings of rodeo if the Mannings had like five or six more NFL quarterbacks. The Wrights have five brothers that are now professional rodeo cowboys, plus a brother-in-law, a guy who's married into the family. And now the oldest of those boys has three sons that are now professional cowboys. So I guess there are 8, 9 of them. And if you look at the standings in the top 30 or so of saddle bronc, you'll see 6 or 7 Wrights.
You write about the injuries that a 2-time world champion Cody Wright has endured during his time in the rodeo arena as a saddle bronc rider. And in great detail, you write about those. Does he have worries as a father seeing his sons out there doing the same thing and knowing the type of torture that his body has gone through over the years?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I've covered a lot of sports and including things like hockey and football, and there's no athlete tougher than, I think, a rodeo cowboy. And that is because, largely, they don't get paid anything if they don't show up. And so they kind of have to suck it up. And so I think Cody has kind of passed down that sort of, you know, rub dirt on it and suck it up kind of mentality to these boys. Almost everybody in this family at one point or another tried their hand at other rodeo events, including bull riding. And I think the family sees bull riding as just a little crazy. Most of them have realized at the age of 18 or 19 that bull riding is no way to get old. And so they've gone to saddle bronc riding, which is, you know, of the rocks, of the rough stock events, the bull riding, the bareback riding, and saddle bronc seems to be the most sane. That's all relative, though. These guys are getting hurt a lot, and it's rare that they go through a season without some sort of pretty major injury that ends up keeps them in the hospital or puts them in the hospital.
And you write that there's sort of a utilitarian prestige, not your words, but mine, to summarize what you were talking about there with the field of saddle bronc riding. Oh, tell me a little more about that as it compares to those other two entries in the rodeo field.
Yeah, I mean, the family sort of believes by tradition that, you know, the way that horses were broken was you throw a saddle on them and try to break them and make them into useful ranch horses. So they see saddle bronc as kind of the original rodeo sport, and one that actually has a real purpose. You know, nobody would choose to just get on a bull. That's kind of like a parlor game or like a dare or something that came about. Bareback riding, as the name implies, is basically saddle bronc riding without a saddle. And again, that's not something that guys were doing on the ranches very often, became just part of the rodeo scene eventually. So what they see with saddle bronc riding is that it's much more, and I think I describe it this way, it's much more poetry than chaos. There's a rhythm to it. The judges that are judging these events, and these are subjective judges, are judging both the horse and the rider. And the idea is that you are in sync with the horse. When the horse comes out of the gate and lands on its front feet, your feet as a rider are supposed to be high up on the mane of the horse. And then every time the horse goes up and down, your feet are moving in sync, like perfectly timed pistons. So the best rides are not the ones that look like total chaos and, oh my gosh, can you hang on the way bull riding is. The best rides are these kind of simple looking rides of really big jumps.
Did you know much about rodeo before you began this project?
I knew a little bit. I in my past lives, including at the Fresno Bee, covered a little bit of rodeo, and I've always thought it's really a compelling sport to cover, because the stories are so great. They're just very raw. The athletes are so accessible. They're happy to talk to you as opposed to maybe some athletes in some sports these days. And not a lot of people are writing about it. And so I think it's just really ripe and it's just so colorful. So I knew enough to know that when this idea came along that I was very interested in it.
You spent an awful lot of time with the Wrights. You mentioned that many rodeo cowboys are willing to talk to the media. What was the initial approach like with them? Were they hesitant to talk to a journalist with the New York Times and have someone follow them so closely for so long?
You know, they're wonderful, and they were not hesitant as far as I could tell. I remember meeting them the first time in Las Vegas and basically saying, we'd love to do a story on you. And they kind of went, yeah, okay, whatever. And so then I just kept showing up. And I honestly think that maybe they are just too polite and too kind to ever tell me no, or what are you doing here? So I just kind of kept showing up, and they kept seeming to be very welcoming and happy to see me. And so that went on for about a year off and on. And I wrote a New York Times story. And then when the book came about, I did it again for another 2 or 3 years. And I still kind of randomly show up in their worlds, and they seem very happy to have me. But you do kind of wonder, you know, are you taking advantage of somebody's kindness, because they just don't ever say, why are you here again? But yeah, they got very used to me.
We're talking with John Branch, the Pulitzer Prize winner. His new book is called The Last Cowboys, A Pioneer Family in the New West. John, for over a century now, writers have been eulogizing the American West ever since the government declared the frontier closed back in 1890. There's a lot of romanticization of the Old West and of the cowboy lifestyle. How does this family fit into that overarching narrative? Is this another lament of a lifestyle gone and past, or is this something different?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think we all have these kind of sepia-toned ideas of what the old cowboy, the old West was. And a lot of that has been framed by pop culture, by movies, and by old Western novels and that sort of thing. And I think people who read this will sort of capture that. I think there's a certain nostalgia for it. But I do think it's a fading kind of vestige. And so the Wrights are living in this world of ranching and rodeo that I think a lot of people would be surprised still exists to the degree that it exists. certainly people in New York, where I work, but I think people all around the country will, you know, if you read this, will think this could have been written back in the 40s. This could have been written back in the 70s, except for the issues that they are confronting today, which are very, you know, 21st century.
In a way, this is also a local book. Not only do portions of the narrative take place in rodeos here in Central California, Oakdale, Clovis, Springville, but there's also a local connection to the genesis of this story. Tell me about the role your former editor at the Fresno Bee played in bringing this project to reality.
Yeah, Charlie Waters was the editor at the Fresno Bee. He's the one who hired me back in 2002. As a sports columnist, and Charlie became a mentor of mine. And I left for the New York Times in 2005, about the time that Charlie left for semi-retirement, and he moved to Las Vegas. And so he and I kept in touch quite a bit. And every time I would go to Las Vegas, I would go have breakfast with him at one of his dive spots on the outskirts of town. And over one of these breakfasts several years ago, he mentioned the Wright family. And Charlie was kind of an old rodeo hand himself. He grew up in Kingman, Arizona. He moved all around the West for various newspapers. So he kind of kept his, he had kind of a bent toward rodeo and followed it a little bit. And he told me about this family, the Wright brothers, who were dominating Saddle Bronc. And he and I talked about it and thought it could be an interesting story to sort of, unpeel the logistics of how a family goes about doing this and how you travel rodeo and what's going on with the dad back trying to build this cattle operation. So I stuck that on the back burner for the New York Times for a year or two until I had a chance to really go out and do it over the course of a year off and on. And, that story then ran in 2015. So I've dedicated the book to Charlie. Sadly, he passed away a couple of years ago, so he, will never have seen the final product of his idea.
What do you think keeps the family going and so many of these family members continuing to go in this field? Obviously there's talent. But mm-hmm. as you point out, while they have some good winnings and those winnings have been turned back into the cattle operation, as you also point out, the rodeo lifestyle is brutal and also not necessarily always financially fruitful. Is there something else that is propelling them in this rather crazy field, at least to the outside?
Yeah, I think it's a couple of things. One is that they're really good at it, and they see their brothers or uncles be really good at it and make a living at it. And so they think, well, this is something I can do. And for the most part, these boys, especially now the new generation of boys, they're put on horses at the age of two or three. They have they'll put them on bucking horses or bulls at a very young age. And so they kind of grow up with it. What's interesting about the Wrights, you know, we talked about the 21st century and kind of the urbanization of the West. You know, a lot of these towns across the West, including the kinds of towns where the Wrights live in Utah, are dying towns, and kids don't see a future there in their small towns, or the family ranch is being bought up by corporate interests, and so they're all looking to go to the cities to go find jobs, and the whole way of life is just sort of dissolving. The Wrights are different. For whatever reason, the Wrights have decided, and it's not something that they sat down and talked about, but they have all sort of decided, I think, internally, you know what, we're just going to keep doing what we've been doing. And so these kids grow up, and very few of them have these dreams of moving to the big city and getting a corporate job. They're all thinking, no, I want to do what my dad does. I want to do what my uncle does. And that's rodeo and ranching.
And it sounds like even Bill Wright is, as the patriarch of this family, also open to change. He's looking at a different sort of vision for the future of this cattle operation. How would that play out, and how far along are they on that path?
Yeah, I mean, Bill Wright is kind of the heart and soul of this book in a lot of ways. He's the patriarch here, and he's the one, while the boys are off earning money at rodeos, is trying to keep this cattle operation going and trying to grow it a little bit with the help of their earnings. What's interesting about Bill is that he grew up in that area, right outside Zion National Park, and back when it was very quiet, not a lot of tourists were going to Zion at the time. And he worked for a long time at the Grand Canyon. He would run mule trains down the Grand Canyon. But he's been in that area all his life. And he's been lamenting for many, many, many years how the world is changing around him. And it has just recently occurred to him that instead of running from it, maybe he should try to embrace it. And so he's kind of going back to his roots. This is kind of how the book ends. Spoiler alert. he's kind of going back to his roots, and he's allowing trail rides, and some people have put some like glamping kinds of tents on his property. And he says, you know what, if this is the way it's going, maybe we can sort of make it work both ways.
Do you think he's aware of how this book might also change his family's future?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. We have not sat down and talked about like the potential impact of this book. You know, in my mind, it's just a little book that I wrote. So I haven't thought about it in a broader sense. I suspect he kind of wonders, you know, if somehow the book takes off or something, if it gets more attention. But he is not somebody who is easily frazzled by change. You know, he's a very thoughtful guy, and he's been doing this a long time. And I think, you know, in all those kind of cowboy ways, he just kind of lets the world sort of unspool in front of him, and he deals with it as it comes.
Speaking of lives that are changing through different events from the outside, you yourself, with the Pulitzer Prize for Snowfall, that famous article about the avalanche in the Northwest, that really brought you to just a great attention, even beyond your following in the New York Times as a sports columnist. How has your life changed since that prize?
I'd like to say it hasn't. I suppose, I mean, I say this all the time, that my friends and my family know I'm the same person. And I think they're like, really, you have a Pulitzer Prize? they must just give those to everybody. But I think what has changed is the way people, strangers, perceive me. I probably ruin that illusion when they meet me or when they talk to me. But I think people assume that, you're a Pulitzer Prize winner. That seems to elevate me and maybe open some doors in my own reporting when I call people and they happen to Google me or something. But trust me, it has not changed me. It's not a life changer. I know somebody has said it's one of those things that will now be maybe the first line of your obituary if they still write obituaries by the time I die. But I can't think of any day-to-day way that it has affected me whatsoever. It's a great honor, but it hasn't changed anything in my life.
Before we go, circling back to Charlie Waters, when you look back at the Fresno Bee and even the sports page, maybe even especially the sports page back in the last decade, some remarkable talent came out of that paper and out of the sports department at that time. Andy Katz, Adrian Wojnarowski, yourself, I could go on. What was going on there at that time? What was the secret sauce that had Charlie just have a special eye for talent, or was it this the Tarkanian era brought a lot of talented, ambitious young journalists to Fresno that went on to great things?
I think people will give Charlie most of the credit for that. I think he had an eye for talent. He was one of those guys who would see a glimmer in somebody and give that person a chance. And whether that person was somebody from across the country who had applied, or sometimes even within the newsroom, a lot of people who started at the Bee answering phones as clerks became big time reporters. I'm thinking of my friend David White, who was answering phones and then eventually went on and started to write for the San Francisco Chronicle. I think that's a lot to do with Charlie and people like Bill McEwen, who was there, and Robert Zizzo, who was a sports editor there for a while. I'm very proud of that lineage. You know, Adrian Wojnarowski was in front of me. John Canzano was the columnist right before me. You know, people like Jeff Passan and Vaughn McClure and David White. You can name a million of them. It was quite an era, and I think the Fresno Bee in that era was as good as any sports section of, you know, a medium size as any in the country.
We've been talking with John Branch, former Fresno Bee sports columnist, now with the New York Times, Pulitzer Prize winner, and his new book is called The Last Cowboys, A Pioneer Family in the New West, telling the story of the Wright family, which has dominated the sport of rodeo, specifically saddle bronc riding in recent years. And also going beyond that in this book, talking about the family's cattle ranching operation in a changing Western lifestyle. John Branch, thank you so much for joining us today.
Honor and a privilege. Thank you, Joe.